Where we're about to go to the happiest place on earth, we have someone who was the former executive vice president for all Walt Disney's operations of the theme parks, which is a phenomenal thing. But Disney, is it the same company it was before? The business of the theme park is phenomenal. I think anyone will agree that by far it's one of the greatest experiences. And we have a man who has all the answers about how it all works, how it all began. I interviewed the former CEO of Disney, Michael Eisner, about 6 years ago, but I was completely, I never got the gist of how it all works because CEOs just never really have a true understanding. And the man who created the magic is the man himself, Lee Cockrell. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks so much. Yeah.
So Lee, I have to ask you what everybody else is wondering before. You take a look at Disney, and now Disney is sort of very expensive, and there's, you know, you have a lot of wokeness and DEI, and you have a lot of, you know, Buzz Aldrin and characters and kissing, and the family values of Walt Disney, what the family was, right, which was the core of Disney. For a lot of people, it's not the same. And so you probably have been in it there as well. Is Disney the same company that you were there when you did it?
Well, I think the thing you got to think about is, I tell you, it still today, the ratings are off the charts, families coming together, every Republicans, Democrats, people of all colors. And, you know, a lot of this stuff gets started because the world is changing. Life is changing. Diversity is an issue. When I came to Walt Disney World in 1993, I would say the management was 95% white males. And we didn't have many people of color that were guests and coming there because people go to a place where they feel comfortable and they like it. And we got focused on that and started making sure that we were looking throughout our ranks of potential people that could manage the business that were from different backgrounds, different colors, different sexual orientation. It didn't matter. And over several years, we made a significant change in the way way the place runs and who it attracts. And I would say today, 50% of our management and leadership are women, people of color. It's a, you know, it's like you can't please everybody, and there's always somebody going to be unhappy about something. Even when we would close an attraction, I thought I was going to be killed. I mean, people want it the same. People want everything the same, and they want things to be different. And you can't do that.
But the customer rules, which is one of your phenomenal book. The idea is the customer, do they really want, it's one thing between a company hiring whoever they want to hire. But when you're infiltrating content or attractions that basically are bestowing values upon other people, right? Which is it's almost like Apple, you know, Tim Cook is gay, right? But Apple doesn't like put it down your throat because they buy everything. It seems Disney's taking more of an activist thing. And is that good for business? Or at the end of the day, someone has to take a stand for it, right? And so,
yeah, I think you're right. I think Disney's backing off of that quite some because they took a lot of heat for it. And, you know, it's like any change. You can do it quick or you can do it slowly as the world adjusts to new ways and new ways of thinking. So, yeah, I think there was some damage done. There's no question. And from everything I'm reading now, Bob Iger and a group or around the movie group, particularly is rethinking that focus.
Do you think that they will ever admit that it was a wrong move? You could change it, but it seems as a society today would be like, this is not a good attraction just going on, or they just, you know, you saw that a lot with COVID where a lot of things were done wrong, but no one's admitted responsibility about what happened. We just continue living. Do you think that part of maybe, yeah, examples, if you had big companies like Disney or Apple, or, you know, it's never going to happen with the government, but to say, yeah, we were wrong and here's what we learned and we're not going to do it again. But it seems that in today's, if you're wrong, they use it against you, the board, the media, the people. So no one ever wants to admit that they're wrong, which, you know, that's not how I started in business. I'd be like, hey, you made a mistake. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it again. Here's what I learned. Different culture now, is it, Lee?
Well, it is, you know, and, Disney's business comes from all over the world. I mean, we have visitors from 100 countries, and cast members working at Disney and management at Disney are from every country you can imagine and speak every language. And but what you say about, well, Disney say we made a mistake, I doubt it.
Have you admitted when you made mistakes? Are there things in your job? Maybe explain to people, what was your job? And maybe something you made a mistake that basically, here's the mistake I made, here's what I learned from it, and here's what we did differently.
Yeah, I mean, we put policies and procedures in sometimes that we had to back up and change them again. When I was in France at Disneyland Paris, we told the women they had to wear hose. French women went berserko. We backed right out of that. We put a lot of products in that were too much American in France. We had to redo everything. After we opened, it was a disaster. And I think sometimes if you don't respect the culture of where you're doing business, you get hammered. And we're in a time now where there's a group that likes things and there's a group that doesn't like things. And it's almost every subject. I was telling somebody the other day, everybody in the world is mad right now about something. I mean, anything you bring up. And it's a complicated world, this whole diversity and wokeness, whatever, you know, this. Yeah. How do you have a company that tells it's a place for anybody to work and it's a place for everybody to come, and then it's complicated. It's not an easy path, and obviously when you do something that offends a group, they're pretty noisy about it, and they're pretty out there and in your face, and that has happened. But Disney attendance is doing, the parks are doing great, and you know, I said we never get complaints from children, only from adults. So
that is true.
There's not somebody, I used to tell my Marriott friends, let me tell you, Disney's great because parents don't tell their kids, when you grow up, I'll take you to Marriott.
that is true.
And so it's, you know, it's not, many companies have been faced with this kind of changing their direction, their policy, their hiring. I mean, I think Target went through it, you name it. It's a slippery slope of, you know, how quickly do you change things and how long do you wait? How slow do you go?
But Disney is a little bit different, right? It's basically something that every child just kind of is in front of and shape, you know, that's what parents put on. But here's what I'm interested in, and this is something there. If you take a look at the future of content, right? And I'm sure if you see YouTube Kids, it's basically kids basically recording themselves, the parents record themselves playing, and kids on the iPad are watching other kids playing, right? Whether it's playing video games or like, it's mind blowing. I said to myself, why wouldn't Disney like not capitalize on that, right? So you take this kind of YouTube type thing, you create the character, but they're playing in the park, right? And they have all these activities in the park, like more of like what people want, because sometimes they're like Toy Story. Oh, you know, I used to go outside on my bicycle and I'd come back at the end of the day or play outside. Now everyone's just glued to the iPad. You think that it's interesting that has not happened as much, the content of Disney, which still traditionally film and not in a way that it's consumed today.
Well, I know there's always consideration of how you can involve the guest more in the product, and whether it's riding a ride and scoring points or shooting a gun at some targets and trying to compete with your father or brother. But they're definitely, you know, I don't know what they're doing today about that, bringing the customer into the story. And certainly
but
that's.
But there's magic too, because if you go into Disney, and I think last time I went, they had like zippity doo da, you know what I mean? Or it's a small world, right? And those seem like so 1D, 2D animation wise, like the same thing. And then you have the other hand, the Star Wars, which brings it to a whole new dimension. So there's still the core of the past that is so, you know, and for kids, they don't know any different, right? But as an adult, you're like, wow, that's like so old school, but it works. And so it's kind of like, and you said this earlier, old Coke, right? When they changed the can to new Coke, there was an uproar. So talk about that mix of when you put a theme park of, this is obviously our classics, but the world is evolving to, LED and holograms and all that.
Yeah, and Disney, I think they're all over that too. They're looking at that, how to use that same technology. But at the same time, you can't change everything in these parks. I mean, the capital dollars are, you've got to kind of put the new stuff in when you can. And Disney's spent billions in Disneyland and Disney World on these new Star Wars and these new attractions. But there's always going to be those others, which you can't just change them all immediately. And I can tell you, when kids come, you don't see them on their phone as much when they're in the park. They are very focused on.
Actually, technically, the parents have to be, because that's Disney made a very great business move, right? Explain that business move of doing it, which was genius, because it then became one of the highest downloaded apps.
Yeah, I mean, it's where you can find out how long it is, and you can get a reservation in line on your phone and on the parents. And I think parents are finding that as a negative, too. They don't like this, spending all day on their phone trying to figure out how they're going to see the park or a particular ride. There's a lot of pushback on that also. The old days of where it was more casual and more you could walk around, go to whatever ride you wanted, and today it's a hard job to go to Disney for a lot of people, trying to plan where they're going, what time that ride is.
The famous bracelet. Did were you there around when they did that?
Right. Exactly. It I think a product like Disney or any big major product is just going to always get a lot of criticism for any change you make, one way or the other, that's just kind of the way it is in America. But so far, and we watch the ratings very carefully. We interview about 2 million guests a year.
Wow.
At the ride, at the entrance, when they leave, when they come in, online, when they check into their hotel, when they check. I mean, I think we are very clear on what they like and don't like. And then you try to figure out how to make those changes. And at the end of the day, they're there to make money. It's you could say it's an entertainment company, or you could say it's a finance company. It's the business.
Explain your role at Disney. Exactly what did you do? What were you responsible of?
I was responsible for all the operating areas, the parks, the hotels. And then I had a team of vice presidents that worked each one of those. And I was kind of the coordinator and policy and procedure, operating guidelines, rules. But I would say I focused personally on making sure we were hiring the right kind of people and we were getting rid of the wrong people, that we were really doing what we've been famous for in training, making sure people were getting trained with clarity of what our expectation was for working at Disney World, and also treating people right. Our turnover is very low there because people come there and go to work there and find an environment and a culture where it's very inclusive. Everybody feels comfortable there, working there, and they stay. And it's that hire them right, train them right, treat them right kind of concept that I think more employers are going to have to figure out, because today, young people, if you don't treat them right and include them and involve them, they walk. And they'll walk like that. And there's another job open every day if you want it. So the leadership is, I said, leaders today got to say, tell the applicant what's in it for them, not just what's in it for the company. What are you going to do for me? What are you going to do for my training, my development? What's the promotional opportunities here? It's a whole new world. And it's not like me back in the 60s and 70s where you just did what your boss said and kept quiet and tried to get to retirement alive. And today, and that's not the case. I got 3 grandkids that are 28, 25, and 22, and they're in a whole different ballgame.
What was your superpower at Disney? Would you say like what you excel the best at?
I would say being available and being understood and out and about. Everybody knew me, and they knew they could come and see me anytime they wanted. And they knew that I would enforce this leadership, treating people respectfully. And when they had, and people have trouble with their bosses, the number one reason anybody leaves Disney is they got a boss that's a jerk. I mean, so that was my main focus. It wasn't the technical part of the parks. I'd never worked in a park. I had team people. I had an engineer. I had a food guy. I had a security guy. I had a transportation.
How many direct reports you had to?
I had, during my time there, during the 13 years, I had from 6 to 14, depending on how we organized.
So you were in meetings all day.
I am very focused on time management. I blocked out every week time already, every month, to go out into the parks for 3 and 4 hours, visit the hotels. I had an arrangement with my bosses. Can I ask you if I really have to attend this meeting? And can I send somebody else to update me later? Because at the end of the day, you got to learn to say no to a lot of that stuff, or you won't be out in the operation. You won't know what's going on. You won't know if the bathrooms are clean. And I used to take my grandkids with me. They pointed out many things. They told me the water fountains didn't work and the chicken nuggets were terrible. And so, yeah, people knew I knew what was going on. Now, I grew up doing all these jobs. I don't have a college degree. I went in the Army. I got out. I got a waiter's job at the Washington Hilton. I worked for Hilton for 8 years at the Waldorf Astoria in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago. Then I joined Marriott for 17 years, became the vice president of food and beverage planning for the company worldwide. And all of that because I focused on learning that business. I tell young people today, become an expert in something. Be the go-to person. Everybody knows you know more than anybody else. And because I think there's a big question mark about this degree issue. And do you get the right
degree? Give us an example. Give us any specific example. And I believe that the way to build wealth is to master skills. So I'm completely, give us an example of something that you know that they would know something about and become, in fact, the authority into this field.
Oh, I think you can pick a subject. If you love marketing, you can become the expert. And if you focus on it every day, you can become an expert. The problem is most people don't have the discipline to spend the time and focus. You can become an expert. You know, it's like the best chef focuses on being the best chef. And that's why you have 3-star restaurants in France, 5-star here. Marketing, you can become. And one thing I really spread with people is there's, you know, education's great. And I'm not saying you shouldn't get it. If you can, yeah, great. You learn the finance, you know, that gets you, that might get you an interview. Without a degree, you might not even be able to get in with all this online applying for jobs and all that. But at the end of the day, what really makes you great is experience and exposure. And listen, I do work in 45 countries. I've been exposed. I've done every job. I've worked in the best hotels in the world. I know what it looks like, and that's what they wanted. So when I joined Marriott, they wanted my experience from Hilton Food. When I joined Disney, they wanted me to open all the restaurants in France. I couldn't get out of the food business. And then I got into the hotel operations and became all operations because really, at the end of the day, leading and managing people, it's not any different. It doesn't matter what the product is. It's people. It's people, people, people. And every problem you have in your life will be a person. I guarantee.
I always say every problem I have has a first name and a last name.
Exactly. It's not so, that horse behind you.
Did you report to Bob Iger?
I reported to Al Weiss, who was the president of Disney World, and then eventually he reported to, we have a chairman of each division, consumer products, theme parks, movie divisions, and I reported to him, and he was with Disney for, I don't know, forever. And he was a finance guy, and he became the president of Disney World and then all Disney parks. And that's who I work with. And I tell you, I'm an operator. I don't know. I'm not a strategy guy. I told him he can decide how many bathrooms we need, and I keep them clean. I feed 40,000 people breakfast. I get, 20,000 bedrooms made up every day. And the bathroom's clean. Operations. Let me tell you, operations is what brings them back. Marketing brings you once. We bring them back over and over and over.
Experience, right? Which is, by the way, is that part of what creative magic is? Explain how entrepreneurs here listening to the show create magic and maybe what they're not doing, what they think they're doing, right? I imagine creative magic is wow factor, correct? Which is what Disney has.
Well, it is, but there's kind of some steps. You can't create magic unless you have the right people. Most people don't have the courage to deal with non-performers. They leave them in place. They won't get rid of them. Most people in business and leadership will not do the hard things. So they let them go. And then when you don't do the hard things, life gets harder. And you can't have the hard discussions. You can't make the hard decisions. This is the biggest problem. People know what to do. They just don't want to do it. And so I can tell you that that right there is people. If you don't get that right, if you don't get that right with their attitude and reliability, I tell young people today, the only thing you need to know, if you have a good attitude and you're reliable, you'll learn the business. And you're going to get a lot of opportunity because you're going to be noticed, because most people have got a crappy attitude. And that's me. I'm so reliable, you can't even imagine it. I mean, yes, I've been teaching time management for 40 years. I'm there. I have a good attitude because I don't have a college degree. I figured I better have a good attitude. That might help me.
And it's actually too. I say time management. I would say energy management is the most important thing. And you know, the first thing I did was create a stop doing list. It's not worry about what to do. I got to stop doing, because if I stop doing, then I can be, and then I could do a to do. Everyone's like focus on lists, but you know, I think there's too many point. The mistake that people make is, especially in business, I'm gonna do everything myself. And then when I have money, I'll be able to hire more people to do this, but you're never able to make enough money because you do all the things that don't make money, or you get to a point your business makes say $100,000. Then you got to hire someone for 50,000. Give me an example. Your mental capacity is now like, I'm only going to make 50 now, but all that free time to go and grow. And I think it's a fear mentality that often stops entrepreneurs and business people and from people from growing.
Well, I agree with you. And I think what you said, I said, focus on people and performance. And you're right. Learn to say, no, I'm not going to that. I'm not going to that dinner. I'm not going out tonight. I got to get some sleep. I got to run this business tomorrow. No. And you annoy a lot of people with when you turn them down and say no. But the one major problem I think most people have, they don't feel well in the morning. They don't get enough sleep. And you, as you said, energy. You got to have energy to take the stress and the crap and the customers and the employees and their government. And you've got to have high energy. And look around, people you know, they don't feel good. They didn't get enough sleep. They drank too much. They ate the third meatball. They didn't, you know.
Isn't it because there's no purpose? Like, you got up every morning. I get up every morning. I make a lot of money. I have a lot of different businesses, right? 79 brands and companies. But I would do it for free. So I don't think of it as work. I love the game. I love, you know, like my, for example, the way I'm looking here, I'm talking to, you know, someone who's legendary in the Disney business. And so I woke up excited. That's exciting to me because your energy matches my energy. So talk to me about that.
People ask me why I keep doing writing books and speaking. And I said, that's my golf game. I love it. I enjoy it. And they say, why? I said, because people clap. They appreciate me. And when you become a teacher and show people a better way, that's the biggest satisfaction I get. I mean, I love it. I don't have to do this stuff, but I do it. And I do a lot of it free for nonprofits. And because I feel like after 45 years of Hilton, Marriott, and Disney, I got something to tell you that can change the trajectory of your career. And a lot of young people need to hear it, because your attitude and your reliability and your, this is, well, I mean, I had a lot of guys from Harvard reporting to me, and I didn't have a college degree. And I gave the commencement address to Oklahoma State University, where I dropped out because I flunked out. But I went back and gave the address, and I knew a lot more than most people from my experience, my exposure. And that's what I'm doing today. I got an academy. We have courses. I got courses for new employees. We just created a 51 video, only 2 to 3 minutes each on a subject, just because that's, we're learning. That's it. Kids want fast, quick, 2 to 3 minutes. I post a 1 minute leadership video every day on Instagram, just 1 minute. Think about this today. And all of a sudden we got 60 or 70,000.
That's how I found you.
Yeah. I mean,
you're my algorithm now. So I see you. And that's why I was like, you know, but it's interesting too, someone at your age, how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm going to be in 2 weeks, 80 years old.
First of all, I got people at Southwest at 60, you know, they go into the wheelchair. It's like, they barely get, you have full of energy. They get cured on the way out though. That's one thing. Once the flight goes in, they get cured, but your energy and your enthusiasm, is just remarkable. But people might say, I don't know social media, I'm too old. And you're like, hey, let me put my, that's the way the message is.
Nobody's older than me. So, and by the way, I got a young guy that I, helps me think about it. You know, he's 28, and you better have somebody around that's got the new stuff. And he takes care of a lot of this for me and posts it. And we work out a schedule. And I got another guy, we do our podcast together. We have 500 episodes of our podcast, Creating Disney Magic. It's only 15 minutes every Tuesday for 10 years. And wow. We don't ever miss it. And it's a how to hire, how to fire. We talk about anxiety. We talk about depression. We talk about families getting into trouble with not paying attention, having dinner with your kids, you know. And I think maybe that's why I'm pretty realistic. I grew up in Oklahoma on a farm. My mother was married 5 times. I've been adopted twice. I got my name Cockrell, 16, by husband number 4, who was a doctor. I got to go to college. But, you know, I've been married 55 years. And my son's been married 30 years. And we broke that thing. You talk about leadership. It's at home, too. Home, work, all the same. Who are you? That's what I tell you. And I'm frustrated with people not underestimating what they can achieve.
Or
underestimating their influence.
I mean, that too, but I think people don't like, they don't want to succeed as bad as they want to breathe. They don't, you know, when I interviewed Tom Brady, he said to me, discipline plus commitment plus action equals success. You know, you have to be like super disciplined to be like, as you said, go to bed early, go this, learn to say no, obsesses, you know what I mean? Put in the extra practice, but then you have to be committed to being the best version of yourself. And then if you don't do it, nothing's going to happen. And I'm like, you know, 7 Super Bowl later, and you know, and you know what frustrated me about that, Lisa? I interviewed him in Australia, okay, and 3 times in a day and a half, right? 2 shows in 1 day and a third.
And where, there's in Australia?
In Australia, Melbourne and Australia and Brisbane, Australia, and he got all these people with these jerseys, and I'm thinking all of these people there are cheering for Tom Brady, right? And I'm thinking, how about cheering for yourself? Right? You're cheering for somebody else to win while you're sitting there, right? And saying, what do I do to need to win? Right? Like you're obsessed about him, criticizing him, pushing yourself, loving him. Why don't you cheer yourself to win? It's crazy, right?
Well, it's a small group of people that do this. I mean, you know, literally, I really believe the statistics that most people don't like their job. They don't like what they're doing. They were born unhappy. They stay that way. They're negative. I think about my life, you know, I worked hard. I learned the business. I take care of my health. I have a trainer 3 times a week. I eat right. I go to bed at 9 o'clock. I read before I go to sleep. So I know more the next day. People don't want to do that. They want, no. You know, if you want to go
short
out.
Term, they want immediate gratification.
Exactly.
So by the way, the book Customer Rules, which is interesting because everyone said, the customer is always right. And whoever said that was a customer, right? And how do we know what the customer wants? Because Steve Jobs, who's probably one of the great marketers of our time, no one thought they needed an iPhone. No one thought they needed iPod. Nobody thought they needed an iPad. And they sold the vision. And so where's that line between, you know, you go to customer, I want this. And you created that. And you're like, well, I don't want it anymore. What are we talking about? You just said that 2 weeks ago versus creating it and then selling it.
Yeah, I think Apple might be one of the big exceptions when he said, you know, people didn't even know they wanted this iPhone. And we put things in Disney, which guests didn't know they wanted, products, ways to visit Disney, hotels that they didn't know, but they liked them afterwards. And we've got a lot of creative people think about that thing, about that. But at the end of the day, I tell people, forget the real creative thing that blows them away, but think about just the business things. And I tell you, your employees and your customers know everything you need to know about being great on what you do. Maybe not that big jump to, you know, we bring like Amazon. I order a book and they bring it while I'm talking to you. But that alone, any business that wants to get better, be talking a lot to your customers and a lot to your employees. Every employee knows something you don't know, and they're afraid to talk to the boss, and the boss doesn't listen. And that's the difference between being an average company and a great company is I got to know if you're happy or not and what you don't know. I don't like your delivery service. I don't like your operating hours. I don't like your coffee. We got to know. I got to know. And I'm not afraid to deal with that. I love talking to guests that are chewing me up because they didn't see Cinderella, you know, and Mickey Mouse wasn't where he was supposed to be. And if you don't like to take the heat, you shouldn't be in the customer business or the client business, or because that's probably your main responsibility is to know what's going on. Problem is most people don't know the truth. I mean, the truth. And the higher you go, I think sometimes maybe the CEO doesn't know the truth.
Oh, that always happens because there's different layers of people and you're last one to know. But it often happens with me in my business, unfortunately. Lee, what about the pricing, right? Disney has just become so expensive. An average family would be like, I spend 10 grand to go there. On one hand, obviously it is a business, right? They have shareholders and investors. But on the other side, you know, it's such an important part of a traditional family to be there. Do you think there's a responsibility for companies to say, like, let me make it more affordable to everybody? Like, we're making billions, but do we need to make like 10 billion or are we okay making 3 billions? Or at the end of the day, it is a business and it is a product.
Yeah, I think that's a question for almost every company in America right now that's pricing that through the ceiling. And I wasn't even aware of how expensive things got until maybe after the pandemic. And I started seeing, I look at something, I go, what? It was so, the prices went up so much that it was in my face. It didn't make sense. It didn't calculate why you would pay that much. I mean, I bought a pound of coffee the other day at $15, you know. Wow. I'm going, what? $15? But Disney's always been considered, well, maybe not, I don't know when it.
It's not a luxury, that's a necessity.
It's always been expensive. It's like a
luxury. It's a luxury that's a necessity. It's like, it's luxurious because it's expensive, but it's a necessity because people want to go. It's a trip. It's a family. It's a, you know, the first thing I was ever taught, interestingly enough, about Disney, and it was my coach said to me, is that you have Disney doesn't sell theme parks. It sells memories. That's the first, actually one of the first business advice I ever got.
Bingo. And we do that. You do that. Your favorite place to go. And I go to Carmel, California for vacation every year for the last 40 years because and the hotel rates are outrageous. I rent a house for a month. I go, am I out of my mind?
But are you in Orlando? Are you in Orlando still?
Yeah.
You got to enjoy the nice weather.
I get my electric bill. You know, my electric bill is $800 a month. Wow. At home. And I'm going, what? And but
too many podcasts. Too many podcasts.
Yeah, maybe. But it is a problem. And I feel bad for families that can't go because it's a disappointing. It's kind of like telling your kids there's no Santa Claus when they're four. You know, they kids want to go. I mean, it's kind of one of those things you have to do when you're an American, particularly. And I don't know what the answer to that is. It's a company.
What's the difference between, on another topic, between Marriott and Disney as two companies? Like, you know, they're both in the hospitality business, but what was the culture between the both that differences that you could lay out? As a lifetime Titanium member, I speak from experience on Marriott. So
Marriott, the family was huge influence. Now you see, I started with Marriott when they only had 32 hotels.
Wow.
In Philadelphia. And when I left to go to Disney, they had 900. Today they got 8,000. And so the company has changed, just like Disney. Disney got bigger, you change. But I would say the general culture, the sense of responsibility of they talk about it all the time. Take care of the customer. Bill Marriott told me something I still use today. He said, Lee, when in doubt, go in favor of the customer. And I just gave a client a $5,000 rebate because they weren't happy about some work I did with them. And I've never done that. But at the end, I thought about it. I thought about, yeah, it wasn't as good as I usually do. And I thought about Bill Merritt saying that, go in favor of the customer if you're not sure. And that goes in any Marriott hotel you go to. The people are really wired that we're the best. We're special. And I think it's between them and Hilton now. But Marriott travelers usually stay there because it's reliable. It's clean. It's convenient.
I think it's also the reward system. If you travel a lot, right? So you go in and you have, you know, the late checkouts, the lounge. I mean, it becomes, I think hotels, if you travel a lot, but if you don't, I think a lot of it becomes like, if, you know, if the Hilton and Marriott next to each other and the Hilton's $100 cheaper at night, you're like, well, I'm just going to go to the Hilton. I don't think there's much difference between a Hilton and a Marriott. I talk about on a general.
Some people pick brands just because of dependability. I think I can count on it. I don't travel much, but that Marriott or Hilton, or that sounds like the right thing. I don't want to be in some little hotel that I don't know what's going on. And so there's a dependability, reputation, brand. I mean, the brand. And Marriott does a good job of keeping that brand alive.
And also, interesting enough, like, they create these sub-brands, right? All these other brands around that. But what people understand, Marriott doesn't own any hotel. They're just, in fact, the management company, and they take a piece of this, and someone like me would own a piece of real estate, and then they would manage it for me and use the booking and hire all the people, right? So people don't, Marriott doesn't own any hotels.
Royalties and fees, that's everything for them. But they have very tight, strict, enforced contracts with those franchisees. You better do it right or they'll pull the franchise. Now, all these 29 brands they have, I don't know which hotels are Marriott's anymore.
That's interesting. And I'm not sure why. Like, is it just like, why wouldn't you just put the same brand everywhere? Or like, it's interesting. Like, I don't know what
why they don't put buy Marriott everywhere.
They do in some of the brands. Yeah, like, but do. For example, Autograph is owned by Marriott. I didn't know until I got there. And so I was like,
exactly. I find that all the time. In fact, I went up to check in and the lady said, we don't have a reservation. And well, I was at the Hilton and it was next back behind me in the same parking lot was a Marriott. But people do that. They want to be a franchise and they want to be represented by Marriott for one reason, the reservation system. That's where they get all their business. I mean, it's the booking.
Hard business to be in the hotel business, to own hotels. Yeah. It's not, especially after COVID. Now, by the way, so everyone, obviously you have Creating Magic, the customer rules and time management. What's the Cockrell, the Academy? What is that about? What did you try to do? What are you working on now?
Yeah, during the COVID issues, we had nothing to do. So we said, why don't we create a little leadership management academy? And so we today that has 10 courses on it. It has the time management course. It has a management course. It has a leadership course. It has how to think about designing your business from the guest's point of view. And we keep adding to that. We have about, I think, 250 members. We charge $400 a year and people keep joining. And it's probably a better value than going to college. Let me tell you, it's to the point. And the courses are great and they're right where the young people learn today. And it's just been fun to be in the teaching business. And there's a big demand out there for people to learn in a different way. And I guarantee you, the things we teach, you don't learn in college. It's those things that you learn through experience and exposure and time and job. So that's one thing we do. And then we have a day called something the Main Street Leader, which is a newsletter, $9.95 a month. And it goes out in Portuguese. It goes out in Spanish. It goes out in English. And it's really a training course. You get one every month and it teaches you how to start to implement this culture in your business. So it was something to do and it turned out to be fun and we just kept doing it.
Well, yeah. The magic is not in Disney. The magic is the people behind Disney, and it started with Lee Cockrell. Pick up any of his books. They're phenomenal. I like Creating Magic a lot because it was, I'm all about the wow factor in any business. And I always said, and here's what I say when I speak to thousands of people, your business is like a theme park and you can have the greatest theme park in the world, but if nobody knows about it, they're not coming. Then you can tell people you have the greatest theme park in the world. You're outside saying, come on in. And they go in there. There's tumbleweeds. They'll go right back out. And it used to be in the old days where, eventually catch up to you. But now on the internet, people are like, let me tell you. And then You know what I mean? And negativity, and quickly your brand. It takes a lifetime to build a brand and 5 minutes to destroy it. Strongly recommend you pick up all three of his books because I think it's the foundational business of magic, of the wow, the customer knowing what they want and how to build products and services that around that. And also, if you can't make time, then it's not going to happen. And that's what leads. I'm going to give you the final words on the show and also your favorite quote.
Yeah, I would say my favorite quote is, please don't underestimate what you can personally achieve. And don't underestimate the influence you have with people every day. You're being judged every second of every day. So don't forget that. Your reputation matters. It's what guides your whole career. And I would just say you got to know more to be more. You got to know more to do
more. You got to know more to be more. I like that. I like that.
Most people are not.
I'm gonna X that right now, and I'm gonna give you credit.
Okay.
By the way, one thing about me, speed of implementation, right? From the moment I come up with an idea, boom, we are live on this show. It don't matter. I'm messaging out. And you need to know more.
Well, here's how I would say it: you have to know more, to do more, and be more.
To do more,
and be more.
I'm actually using you as a quote. I'm actually putting your name. I'm gonna give you credit. I can't officially, as people, so think about me. I give credit. You can't. That, by the way, fascinating interview. You are just so humble, and I don't get too inspired after doing some podcasts, but you gave me the juice on this one. I really appreciate it, and I hope you come back on. I want everybody to share this, like, subscribe, comment on it. Doesn't cost anything. His principles about business and what he discussed, his honesty, is obviously what's going to make you a better entrepreneur, a better someone at your job, right? There's also, it's not just about you being an entrepreneur, but an intrapreneur. And that's what Lee was. He treated Disney as his company. He knew his role, empowered other people, used the truth, did what the key principle of anything, better, faster, more efficient. Because you need to be more, to do more, and be more. Lee Cockrell. Thank you very much. We'll see
you. That was great.
I will see you on the next show. Bye-bye.
Appreciate